planet is a lonely speck in the great cosmic dark.
Hi, this is Chrissy.
And I'm Marie.
And you're listening to Alt Pop Repeat,
a show where we get into the nitty-gritty around counterculture, alternative culture, and sync it up with what?
With pop culture.
Yeah, man. That's what we do.
There we go.
High five. Yes.
So, Marie.
Tell me what's up, Chrissy.
If you can't love yourself, how the hell you're going to love somebody else?
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Thank you. That's
the beginning of this show.
That's the beginning of the show. That's a reveal if ever I heard one.
What are we talking about today, Marie?
Today we're talking about drag because it's a major movement in our world right now. And where did it come from? Who are the players? And we have none other than
Trinity the Tuck Taylor. Where is Trinity the Tuck Taylor from, Marie?
She's from RuPaul's Drag Race. She was RuPaul's Drag Race season 9. And then she came back. She was on RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars season 4, where she was the winner, tied with Monet Exchange. It was a very controversial win for some. But I'm happy that both of them won because I love Monet Exchange and I love Trinity the Tuck. So
here we go.
More wins.
more
drag for all.
Right. More drag for everybody. So in this episode, we talked to Trinity about just drag culture, the counterculture movement around it. And then we also chat about her personal stories.
What a fun interview. And she's such a big star. I love it. So let's go. Can we just go right into the interview? I kind of want to sit at the altar of Trinity for a bit.
Yes, we can. And in the end, we sync it up.
I have been doing drag for just past 17 years. This past March was 17 years.
Wow.
And I just have always tucked. You know, some drag queens wear a lot of padding and tights to where they can, you know, hide things without using duct tape. But my drag is more of an illusion. And so I have to use duct tape. So I'm from Alabama and I live in Florida now. So I went back to Alabama for a show, to do a show in there with one of my good friends that I've known forever. And they're like, oh my God, your tuck has gotten like 10 times better. I'm going to start calling you the tuck. And we laughed. And then she actually brought me on the stage as Trinity the Tuck. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, this is kind of like genius. And this is like all before, it was after filming season 9, but before we had aired it. And so I hated the fact that my name was like Taylor. That's my real last name, by the way. And I always wanted something unique for a drag name. So I was like, I'm just going to go by that. So that's how it became the Tuck.
That's nice. Perfect. I feel like there's something very coveted about having a tight tuck. Like,
yeah, I guess I would imagine.
I mean,
so
I was a drag. Yeah. I always, I mean, my tuck is not meaning.
It's an art in its own. It's an art with the art form.
It is.
What was it like growing up in, you know, you went to Springville High School in Alabama. Were you doing drag back then as well too in high school? And if you were people open to it, or was this something that you were just doing at home with yourself and everything else and maybe with some friends? What was it like?
Absolutely not. I was not doing drag in high school. I mean, the first time I ever did drag per se was in high school, but it wasn't serious. They did a charity thing at my high school called the Womanless Beauty Pageant. And they invited all of the guys from our high school to dress in drag and basically do like a walk. Like it,
wow.
It was something so dumb, but it raised money for something. I don't even remember what the cause was, but it was something local for the school. And I won the Womanless Beauty Pageant, but it was awful. I didn't know anything that I know now. And I got my wig from Party City. It was like a Beatles wig.
You know,
like,
oh, man.
It was like a bowl cut.
Yeah.
And like really plasticky. And I borrowed some of my older sister's clothes, which was awful. And my boobs were water balloons. And I had my younger cousin do my makeup. And it was literally like frost eyeshadow with a little bit of eyeliner, no lashes, a lip gloss. I mean, it was bad. But as far as like serious drag, I didn't start actual drag until I was 18.
Wow.
And out of high school. And I never did it in Springville. Springville is a really small town. I wouldn't even call it a city. It's like a town, like
so
a small town.
Are they saying, like, well, they must be so proud of you now. What does the city say? You know, like there must be a Trinity Day, I would imagine. You know, like you put, you put Springville High School and everything else on the map, I would say then, in that small town.
I don't really know. I don't know how they would feel about that. I haven't went back and like talked to people from my high school or anything like that. So, but it's a very small town in Alabama. So you can imagine there wasn't even a red light when I lived there.
Why do you think drag is so popular right now? Why is it having a moment?
The main thing is RuPaul's Drag Race. RuPaul's Drag Race really gave a platform to drag. Now, I do want to make this a very like solid statement. RuPaul's Drag Race is an amazing platform for drag, but it is not like the end all be all of drag. There's so many other types of drag out there that aren't on Drag Race. Drag Race highlights a very small percentage of what drag is out there. And, but Drag Race has been the vessel to bring drag to mainstream. Now, with that being said, there, you know, now you can be a drag queen and do it on YouTube and Instagram, and there's so many other platforms now. I think it's popular now because it has visibility. Also, I think that it's not looked at like something grungy, and like there's always been a stigma with drag artists back in the day before it became famous. Like you either did drugs, you were in the sex work industry, no shame on sex work industry, but there were those stigmas of you were basically in society's eyes deemed trash. Right. And I think Drag Race highlighted that we're just regular people. We have the same struggles that other people have, and that it really truly is an art. And so I think that's one of the biggest reasons why it became so big. I also think right now with everything that's going on in the world, not just right now with this uprising of Black Lives Matter, which is a huge thing, but there's so many political things in the last couple of years. Drag is a political art, and
it is, yeah.
We've always used our voice for that, and that also projects it out there in the world for more people to see.
Do you think then, because it's starting to become more homogenized, that it's changing the art, that it's changing drag?
Like RuPaul's Drag Race,
yeah,
is that influencing
just,
it?
Right, and because it's becoming more homogenized, like, you know, drag queens are starting to look very similar to each other. Do you think that it's changing the art now?
A part of the mainstream, though?
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, like, I would say Beardra. Beardra does not look like...
Well, there is a conversation that people are starting to do similar drag, you know, and that doesn't mean it has to be true, but it might become homogenized at some point.
Fair.
Do you think it's changing the art of it, though, in time?
To specifically answer the question,
yeah.
It's either a yes or no. The answer is absolutely yes. Has it changed drag? Now... Has it changed all drag? No. There are still what is considered like underground drag out there.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What I think Drag Race has done is it's put a specific look or brand on most drag of what people see, you know, like a very specific look, like you said. A lot of drag queens nowadays have started drag because of Drag Race. And they want to look like the Ravens, and they want to look like the Trixies or
right.
the Kim Cheese. But there are other drags out there, like alternative drag, bearded drag queens, cis women drag queens. The list goes on. There's so many other trans women drag artists that don't conform to that specific mold of what popular drag is.
Right.
And not that popular drag isn't good, but I think, yes, it has changed, but I think it's also a good thing. You know, drag has never been one thing or the other. And like art of any kind, it's always evolving.
There's a really interesting, because you, when you're bringing up like female drag queens that are not necessarily drag kings. So I call them bio queens. I don't know if that's necessarily like the going term, but there is, has been a lot of controversy around them entering into the space that's saying that their drag is the art of men impersonating women. That is the art. Have you experienced or have you seen any of this conversation about bio queens being outside of the sphere, or am I just kind of making it up?
No, I think that this is a great point of what you were talking about earlier, the question of has drag changed? Because years ago, there was not female, cis female drag queens. There wasn't. There just, it wasn't a thing. And so the space has transformed into something else. It's not any longer just about transformation from male to female. And really, it hasn't always been. It's not been that. Like, trans women have always been part of the art since the very beginning. So it hasn't always been the transformation, but I get why a lot of people think it's transformation from male to female. And my stance on this has changed too over the years. I too, whenever I first heard about cis women starting drag, I was like, what? This is like, it's just a woman with more makeup on. But you know, you have to educate yourself and you have to learn new things, just like everything. You know, if you're not educated on it, you're going to be ignorant on it. And when you get educated on it, you can open up your mind to what that really is. And to me, drag is no longer about the transformation from male to female, or even necessarily about the femininity of it. It's about the art. Drag is unlimited on what you want to do. You don't even have to look like a woman to really do drag anymore. It's really about the makeup artistry, the innovation of costumes, and whether you have those costumes made or you make them yourselves. And, you know, there's a whole movement of like trash drag where you take stuff that is like literally like trash, like paper, and you make costumes out of it that are like elaborate. And you know, there's just so many ways to do drag, and I think that this space is big enough for all types of drag, and I think that cis women drag queens are absolutely valid and, in my opinion, welcome in this space.
Yeah, and honestly, is there also this conversation too about, you know, in Drag Race that there's more fashion than to the art and other parts of it? Do you think that queens are focusing more on fashion than they are on the other aspects of drag?
I think that sometimes the judges' critiques are a little too pushed off of on just fashion, because yes, are there fashion queens out there? Absolutely. But when I started drag, and even still today, I don't consider myself a fashion queen. I'm a costume queen. I came from an era of drag where you have costumes, and I don't necessarily want to always look like fashion. I want to sometimes be costumey. And I think that that's very unfair to judge all drag the same. You know, if you're gonna allow, for instance, Nina West on season 11 is a costume queen. There's nothing fashion about her, like literally, and that's not an insult.
Yeah.
She's a campy comedy costume queen who, with her looks you saw on the runway, always came from a campy place, and they always told a story. And that's part of drag. That's one part of drag. And if you're going to allow her as an artist on the show, you should judge her based off of what she brings to the table, not based off her drag compared to a fashion queen, because she'll never compare.
It's true, because when you go into drag and you're seeing all these different parts, like even in Toronto when we go, a lot of bearded queens, a lot of queens that have like lots of natural chest hair.
That's a good point.
Originally, like, that was really jarring for me to see, but then getting into it and realizing this is the art form, this is the story that they're trying to tell. Let's get into that world, let's enjoy it, and let's celebrate it and just accept it. Like, we are not all these monolithic creatures. Why does drag have to fit into this one little box? Because that's what we see on television. That's what we know is true.
Yeah.
I mean, all of us in one way or another, yeah, know true. That the who we are supposed to be as reflected back to us on television is not true. That's not what real life is. Real life is so way much more than that.
There's so much more.
How was it to be a part of the first Tide winner?
So initially, you obviously, and I've talked to Monet about this numerous times. So that night, when we were watching the crowning, because they film different endings and you don't know what the ending is going to be, that's why we were watching. So we did not know who was going to win. And so we're watching and we're in this bar. The projector TV thing is like way up there, so it's hard to see. It's also hard to hear. So when they announced the tie, we did not film a double win. So we did not even think that was an option. So when she said it, I didn't hear her clearly and I didn't know what she was saying. So that's why, like, if you watch the reaction video, I'm literally like this for like 20 or 30 seconds until she mentions it again. And that's when I hear her and then I'm like, oh, wow. So that night we, Monet and I both are shuttled off to a concert by Kacey Musgrave, where she brings us on stage and like announces to the world that we won. And backstage while we're waiting to go on, Monet and I are like just looking at each other like, I can't believe this is what happened. Because initially we were thinking, really, they should have just picked one, because a tie isn't really a win. Like you did not beat everybody. You tied. It's a draw in the sand. So you did not really win. You know, neither one of us really won. We both were tied. And yeah, we both got the money, but it just kind of, from a standpoint of competition, like I'm a pageant queen and Monet is very competitive too, it just seemed like a cop-out to us. Now, in hindsight, over much thinking this over constantly over time, I can't speak for Monet now, but myself, I'm totally happy with the double win, because really when you think about it, Drag Race is more about a reality TV show than it is about the competition. And when I think about this, I try to use my platform as much as possible, long before what's going on right now, for to uplift other artists. And what better of a statement than having not just one gay man on TV win and be recognized, but to have two, and not only two gay men, but one is a person of color and one is a white person together as equals. What does that say to the world? And to me, that's more important of a message than it is about how I originally felt. And that's not, I don't feel that way anymore. I'm super happy and content with how it is. And Monet has been an amazing representative. I feel like I've done a lot. I think that, you know, we both are happy, at least from what I know of Monet. I think we're both happy with what things happen.
Do you feel that there's any new trends you're mentioning, like online digital shows, because of our experiences with COVID?
I don't think that digital shows are preferred. From my experience, I prefer performing in front of an audience, because that is where I get my energy from during a show is actually interacting one-on-one, face-to-face. Do I think that this is a great opportunity to implement that into drag culture? Absolutely. I think that digital shows can still continue, especially for drag artists who may not live in a big city or, you know, in a different country that may not be okay with LGBTQ+. Also artists that are in a foreign country that's trying to break into mainstream and in a country that like the US that has a big platform, it gives you a platform to be seen. And I do think that that's cool. I also think it's a great option for fans who are in these areas that can't get to a city where you're performing to see you. And Like, I just started, I have my own podcast that I do, and I just started doing a live version of that. I think I will continue to do that because I think that that gives my listeners an opportunity to actually see us, how we actually have conversations. And I think that's super cool and super fun and super important.
The one other question that I wanted to ask you too, is where do you see the future for drag in the next, you know, even if it's the next year or 5 years or 10 years, what do you think it's going to look like? And, or you can also ask or respond to like the way your brand is going to look like too. Like, where do you see it going?
I think drag is taking over the world. I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. I know that WOW Presents, the production company that puts on Drag Race, has already sold the franchise to multiple other countries. So they're, if they've just sold those are just starting. And, you know, Canada Drag Race has already been filmed and it's about to air. They're already in the middle of filming the second season of Drag Race UK. I know that Australia is in the works. That Germany is already got something that's a spinoff of a Drag Race-like kind of show. So drag is taking over the world. I think that it's just going to continue to go because, like I said before, drag is unlimited. There's no boundaries to what you can do with drag. And as it filters through being more popular, I think we're going to see it change in other directions as well. But I just think it's going to continue to go. It's such a diverse platform of art that I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
What's your favorite drag moment of your career so far?
My favorite drag moment, I feel like if I retired tomorrow, I would be very happy and content with the things that I've accomplished with my career. My biggest accomplishment and the happiest moment I would think from my career is actually has nothing to do with Drag Race. Before Drag Race, I competed in a pageant called National Entertainer of the Year. And for those of you who are listening that don't know what that is, it's a pageant. Think like the real Miss America kind of, but drag. And it has a long legacy of entertainers that are iconic in the underground scene. And I did that pageant 6 times over a 10-year period. And on my 6th time, I finally won. And because I started when I first started drag in that system, that system, the pageant system, kind of was my school for drag. It is what taught me how to be a drag queen. It's what taught me how to be polished. It introduced me to so many important, influential people that are still important in my life now, that when I won, it was like a check mark. And even more so than my Drag Race win, because I worked for so many years doing it. And it was just a big life goal for me. So I would say that one for sure.
There seems to be lots of different ways, obviously, that people are coming into drag. So you have now, in particular, you have Instagram and there's YouTube. But it sounds like if we're going back in time, if we rewind, there's the ballroom circuit in New York. There was the clubs, the club kids that brought in a different vibe to it. And then there was pageants. How did they kind of like mesh together? Did those worlds ever meet before, or did they always just kind of operate very separately?
From where I'm from, there were no ballroom scenes. There were no club kid scenes. So it was just pageant. But what I can imagine is somewhere in bigger cities like New York, Los Angeles, possibly Atlanta, Chicago, there has got to be a merge, because in the end, outside of a pageant, outside of a club kid, outside of a ball, us as drag artists perform in clubs. So we all in those larger cities, I can imagine converged in a lot of the same spaces, because years ago, like say 20 years ago, there just weren't that many spaces. So if we wanted to work, we had to work together. So I can only imagine that, yes, those did come together. And that's probably why the New York scene and the LA scene and the Chicago scene has such diverse drag, because it's not just one type of drag. And, you know, they all kind of took pieces from each other and made their own drag, which makes everything just so different. And that's what's great about drag.
Yeah, absolutely. What is next for you? What can people look forward to from Trinity the Tuck Taylor?
You know, I'm going to continue to put out content. I am still in the process of working on my Winners Tribute series. The fans have really enjoyed that on my Instagram. So I'm going to continue to maybe do some more tributes of different things, maybe not even just Drag Race related, but other things. I am enjoying doing my podcast called Work, and you can find that on my links in my Instagram. There's more YouTube content and some other stuff, music, a ton of stuff. I'm constantly trying to do more. So I think the future is endless for me, and I'm just going to continue to keep trying to achieve a new goal.
If you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else? Can I get an amen?
Amen.
That's right. Now let the music play. That's how we should. Da-da-da-da-da. This is the beginning.
Right.
The beginning.
So Marie, you are a massive drag fan.
I love drag.
I know you do. As much as I love UFOs, Marie loves drag.
I love drag.
So let's start off by telling us how you got into loving drag.
Oh, I got into loving drag because I was a lonely mixed race girl in an East Coast town. I had big dreams, but not a lot of people understand what I was or who I was. And I grew up feeling kind of ugly. And I saw RuPaul, this glimmering, shining beacon of a human being, was bursting on the scene with Supermodel of the World. And everybody was singing, "You better work, cover girl, work it girl, do a twirl."
I thought it was "give a twirl."
Why not?
Right.
Supermodel of the World was the song. And I was like, whoever this RuPaul is,
yeah,
I am enraptured and I'm in love. And I just became obsessed without even understanding that RuPaul was a man in drag. I was too young to really comprehend what that was. And I didn't get it, because anytime I saw Ru was Supermodel of the World RuPaul.
But and she really changed. And, you know, she's iconic.
She's iconic.
And she, again, Ru is our first sink. She's iconic because she really was the person, I would say, that helped push it into mainstream.
Drove it
culture.
Into mainstream, she in did. A way that no one else could really fathom in the 90s.
And very accepted, too.
Very accepted.
Yeah.
Because it was a time of acceptance. Like, you have to keep in mind, if we take a look at everything that was happening in pop culture at that time.
Yep.
For RuPaul to come out, we had the beginnings of grunge music was coming out. The world had a little bit of unrest, and we knew that things had to change, and we had to love. There was like a general consensus of peace, love, and happiness. And so it was just a time for RuPaul. But I, as a child, I did not know Ru was a man in drag. Didn't make any sense.
Wow.
And then I remember my sister told me, or she showed me a picture, and my mind was blown. And I remember thinking, the thought that I had was, if a 6'3" gay man can transform into a beautiful woman, I can too. And then I got obsessed with pageants.
Well, and that, I was just going to say, and segue into the pageant side of it, because pageants are another sink within the drag culture. And I don't think a lot of people know that pageants are connected in with drag. So, you know, we look at, there's tons of different pageants that have been a progression, I would say. You know, Paris is Burning was a film.
Paris is Burning is definitely a huge, huge sink.
Yeah.
I agree with you. Were you going to say that was like a pageant? Finish your thought.
Yeah, but the pageant. But the I remember when I was looking up some stuff around pageants, I found out this documentary called The Queen in 1968.
Yeah, fantastic doc.
Holy!
Did you watch it?
I did. I watched it last night.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I watched it before we did this sync, because it honestly amazing. I'm a huge fan of docs in this style. So it's 1968 and it was directed by Frank Simon. Amazing. It's a beautiful in behind the scenes, real look at the first pageant that was ever done, around the first drag pageant.
It was one of the first drag.
Right. And it wasn't in Women Imposters that they called it. And it was called the Miss All American Camp Beauty Contest. And it was held in New York City's town hall.
Yeah. And you know, the significance of that was 1968 Stonewall riots didn't happen to 69.
Right. So it was just before that.
And so at that time, if you put it in context, to be gay in America was illegal.
Right.
And then there was that whole masquerade law that they tried to implement that said that it was illegal, especially in New York, it was illegal for you to wear clothing that didn't align to your gender, considered to be like to be dressed up as a woman meant that you were in violation of the law. And so the whole thing about it is total punk. It is just out there. And there's like,
well, they were doing this pageant that was against the law, but other people were part of this. Andy Warhol, I believe, was a judge in it as well too.
Yeah,
like there was a lot of significant pop culture people representing and being part of this group and helping pushing it and propelling it into mainstream culture, but it was 100% against the law when they were doing it.
Yeah.
And this doc really shines a light on the interpersonal conversations that they would have about
it. Was intimate
being gay. It was extremely, one of the most intimate docs I've ever seen, because it's real footage. It's not this, you know, makeshift, make believe kind of reality TV that we have now. Like, this is real TV.
It's real.
This is real experiences and real men coming in together in a group of people coming to experience and be openly gay and do open drag together.
Like, and it's beautiful.
Really cool. Yeah.
It's a really beautiful film because of the intimate look it is of these men who are participating in the pageant, and they're bringing their characters to life. It's also really interesting to see how the art of drag has evolved over time and how it started. And really, these were men who had to really bring their looks together themselves. They had to sew their own outfits together. Right. To find wigs was really challenging. Imagine? Shoes, you had to find shoes that would fit. I mean, it was a whole other level, because they were existing in a world that was not hospitable to them in that art form. When you see their drag, it was sophisticated for the time, but it's very rudimentary in terms of today's standards, because queens are all about proportions. They understand the proportions of a female body. And so they will pad. We talk about it with Trinity. She talks about the elements that go into it. Padding is a big thing. So it's foam pads that emulate the butt and the hips of women that you stuff into your pantyhose. Then there's tucking in order to get the nice tight tuck. I don't necessarily know if guys in that show and the queen were doing that. There's chicken cutlets now you can get, and breastplates where there's silicone breasts that are matched to your skin tone, and you can wear them and it looks like you have boobs. Like it's a full illusion of breasts. And moving forward into Paris is Burning, which is still one of my favorite films. And it's such an iconic film. Now that one is specifically, it's not necessarily pageants, it's called the Ballroom Circuit. And so the Ballroom Circuit was a place of fantasy for a lot of gay men and trans men to go, where they had nowhere to belong before, because it was so hard for them.
Yeah.
Discrimination was real. They weren't able to, many of them weren't even able to go and be businessmen. You know, so you look at that and you see all the facets of drag. So drag is not just men impersonating women. Drag encompasses this whole spectrum of masquerade.
So why do you think they used pageants to do that? Like, I find that a question. Really interesting sink in context of popular culture. Even back then, that was a sink because they were using something that was really mainstream, like pageants, to express themselves and doing it very in a formal pageant way. I was shocked in how structured it was to an actual pageant.
Yeah.
So I found that to be an interesting sink on its own during that time when they were using beauty pageants to propel that idea and not using something else. And now fast forward, we have, it's not pageants, but we have RuPaul's Drag Race now.
It's still a pageant. It's a game show, right? It's what it is. You're crossing a pageant with a game show with some of Ru's foundational tenets of what drag is. And it's different because you'll see some of the girls go on there and they don't know how to sew and they don't know how to do certain things. Some of them are look queens. Some of them are comedy queens. Some of them are new to the art. Some of them are spooky queens and some of them are pageant girls. And you start seeing the whole spectrum.
And so then, it's far from pageant now than I would say.
The pageant still run.
It is, but I would say it's farther away from pageant than it is. And I'm not going to say game show. I'm going to say contest. And reality TV kind of contest than it would be to pageant now, because there isn't this pageant formality that goes with RuPaul's Drag Race.
You do crown a winner
right
at the end. Let's not forget. True. You do have events that you must compete in. You know, there's going to be a snatch game. You know, you have to do the runway. The runways are based on ballroom. So, I mean, there's a little bit. If you watch episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race, you kind of get a small, like, overall perception of how the art form has evolved. This is, again, it ties a lot into the ballroom circuit. Watch Paris is Burning. I cannot stress it enough. It is so good. You learn about the roots of voguing. There's a sink for you.
Oh, yeah.
Madonna, it's almost controversial in a way because in a way she appropriated a dance that was brought by Black, gay, trans as well, performers who are going to the drag circuit to try and find acceptance. But there's this really interesting thing that happens where there's a lot of appropriation has come from the gay community. I think we have voguing was appropriated by Madonna, even a concept of metrosexual also, where it's like certain things that were considered to be a part of what the gay male identity was, and for many of them had been ridiculed and targeted with violence and hurtful words and had made to feel less than for even just indulging in things that people thought were feminine. Because it's so punk, right? That, like, drag is punk.
Drag is full-on punk.
Punk.
And it's more of a counterculture movement than it would be a subculture movement.
100%.
So, yeah, and a lot of people, I think, when they look at drag, they don't realize that that counterculture movement is about pushing something forward and pushing a norm and an ideal forward that is extremely different. It is. And RuPaul helped push that counterculture into pop.
100%. I mean, that concept of a man dressing up respectfully as a woman to impersonate them it's unfathomable early straight cis society. Like, there's no way. Men were just, they would get ridiculed for it. And even just a taste of that skincare or dressing nicely, men would be ridiculed for it. And then we come up to a certain period and metrosexuals are everywhere and they're well accepted. I mean, we saw, you know, Queer Eye for the Straight Eye Guy is probably one of the most formidable spaces where they really were like pushing that metrosexual ideal for it. And it was totally fine. But for years, there's people who are just not able to live in that space because they would just be shamed for it. Before RuPaul was a Australian talk show host who was in drag. That was actually before RuPaul, I was aware of Dame Edna.
Wow.
And before Dame Edna, we had Klinger and MASH.
Wow.
So that, I'm like,
sounds like a mashed potato.
Yeah, but it's like Klinger and MASH.
Klinger
but,
and MASH.
But Klinger,
sounds like a great superhero duo too, though.
But Klinger in the television show MASH, we talked about this earlier off the mic.
Good point, yeah.
Where he was, and they called him a cross-dresser, which is like so offensive. But he was a Lebanese man who enjoyed dressing as a woman. And he was a really interesting character. That was in the 70s in the States. And again, we got to really put this in perspective. Stonewall Riots was a 3-day riot that happened in New York City. At the time, it was illegal to be gay in the city.
Yeah, it was on June 28th, 1969.
You're right, I'm wrong. And it was, the police were ruffling some feathers. They were going, they were arresting a lot of people, and some of it was for the masquerade law. So the first thing that happened was there was a young trans man was roughed up by police. It caused some strife, and the police started to harass, and then I'm paraphrasing, I'm not looking at my computer, this is committed from memory, so hopefully I get this right. So the police were harassing, and Marsha P. Johnson was a Black trans woman who threw the first brick at Stonewall, and that started, that just broke everything, and the gay community came together and they protested. The police ended up holding up in Stonewall, which was this inn. It was owned by the mafia. It was really one of the only like safe places. It wasn't a fancy place by any stretch of imagination, but it was a quote unquote like seemingly safe place because the mafia,
it was in Greenwich Village, right?
Yeah. And the mafia would pay off the police to leave everybody alone because, you know, they want to make money.
Right.
But this day the police decided that they were not going to observe that and they were just going to incite some stuff. So Marsha P throws the brick. Everyone's like, this is ridiculous. The riot ensues. And for 3 days, fights kind of flared up and died down. But what that event did...
Well, it was the catalyst.
Was the catalyst that shook the world.
Right. For the first LGBT movement. That was the first wave for that to happen.
And then what ended up happening is in Canada, our Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau at that time in 1969 made the famous quote is that there is no place for the government in the bedrooms of a nation. And he changed the law. So at that point, it was no longer illegal under the law to be gay.
It's a big movement.
It was a big movement. Unfortunately, in the United States, they didn't have national gay rights until it didn't. They didn't finish the fight. It was up until 2003 in many states.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you really think about it, RuPaul in a lot of states was illegal. RuPaul came out in the 90s. So RuPaul is like probably the, like bar none, the biggest sink.
Yeah. And then we move into other sinks that we look at in film and television. Have a huge part, Rocky Horror Picture Show.
It was very controversial, but it was like such a beloved film.
But it was this kind of like comedy dell'arte of a drag queen.
Yeah, you know, it was a take, an alien.
Yeah, it was a take on it of a drag queen. But I think it gave... So obviously on the other side, it could be bad because it's not the way that, you know, you were looking at a drag queen could be. But it also is a start of having that within film and television, too. It could go both ways and how people would perceive it. But some people might relate to it and some might not. But I would hope that it would. It's a very beloved film, too, within the community still. Yeah.
What I really like about Rocky Horror is, yes, Tim Curry was in a form of drag in it, is that the film itself really played up sexual liberation and androgyny. And
well, it was an open community. It was a place that people could go and they were welcoming other people to come in too. Yeah.
Self-discovery, yep. Queer identity. It was tearing down our social norms that we had built over years and years and years. And so the subtext of the film was, I thought, was really powerful. I saw it when I was really young.
Well, it's a spoof too. The movie's spoofing so many other things. It's spoofing the 50s and that ideal of like happy marriage when they open up with a musical. And then it goes and spoofs like the horror concept of it as well too. So there's all these spoofs on top of a spoof.
I thought that what I got out of Rocky Horror Picture Show was so much more impactful than what I got out of Grease. Grease, yourself for the man you love. Rocky Horror Picture Show is like, yo, everyone is cool. You just do you. You want to lick it? Lick it.
Well, in the artistic way that they did it as well, too. That's what I love about the 80s and this and the later 70s really created those fantasy worlds that I love. But it also brought a lot of conversations to the forefront, too.
Do you know why that was? It was because in Hollywood, there was a censorship bureau that would watch. Remember, you'd hear all those stories and they would have the starlets would come out and they would do a little dance and then the censorship bureau would watch it. I can't remember what it was called. But then they were like, oh, too sexy. Legs are too long. And they're like, they would have to reshoot it and they'd put a veil on her or something. They would constantly were doing that. So there was a form of censorship on American film. So once you got into the 60s, that was gone. So we're coming into the late 60s.
Up the floodgate.
It opened up the floodgate. So now we're having, we're looking at a time where all of that is, it's years, decades of repression and oppression in film that just got snapped back. And now they can explore all these topics that would have traditionally been taboo. They just had to say, oh, this is PG-13. This is restricted. And you're like, okay, great. Now it's age appropriate. The Sailor Starlights. Do you know who these characters are? Because they didn't really, they didn't make it into the English dub of Sailor as Sailor Moon. But very interesting that in the original manga, and I think later in the Japanese animated version of it, the Sailor Starlights were a part of the whole Sailor Moon universe. The Sailor Starlights were actually, they are originally female, but whenever they took on their Earth civilian form, they're male.
Oh, cool.
So when they transform into female bodies.
Very cool.
And so there is, which is formative because, again, it's a children's cartoon that's showing that gender is a construct.
Yeah. Gender is fluid.
Gender is fluid. It is a social construct. And so the punk aspect of drag is so powerful because it challenges what our notions are and within ourselves and what is possible.
Yeah. And then we had other movies too that were too Wong Fu. Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. Such a good movie. That came out in 95.
Yep. Is it Hedwig and the Angry Inch?
Yes. I forgot about that. I actually watched that and then Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar, when I was younger as well too. And it was one of the first times that we've ever seen major leading actors play drag roles and then really had a comment about being accepting and accepting yourself as a male that does drag and moving forward with that and being happy with who you are and the way you look in your body. But there's lots of other movies like Some Like It Hot. They were doing drag as well, too.
So if we're going to do that, yeah. Mrs. Doubtfire, yeah, oh my God. Tootsie.
Tootsie. There's so many. But I think that's the point is that we look at through so many different timelines of history that men have dressed up as women. And it was still acceptable in context. Maybe not everybody was accepting it. It still had an underlying current of acceptance because people still did it and film and television still propelled it. Hollywood still propelled
it. Pantomime was always cool. Yeah. Right? Like Shakespearean, it never left, right? There was always a version of it that happened. And so as long as it was in the context of that little box, it was cool. But drag, as we know, it was not. As Elizabethan times, and women did not have the ability to perform in plays because it was, so scandalous. Scandalous! There's a woman on the stage. This theater is a thespian art, not a lesbian art. Off with you. Like,
off with you.
I mean, just ridiculous.
It is, yeah.
But even now, bio queens, so women who dress in drag, very controversial in some people, even people I deeply care about the entitlement of women to drag. And my point is this. I said drag is a community that is accepting to all.
Yeah.
It is an opportunity for you to have acceptance with yourself and to share that in this wonderful performance art that is political by nature. For men, it's very anti-establishment. For women, it's self-acceptance. And self-acceptance for men, but it's in a different way. Yeah. Whereas for a long time, women were always told how to look, how to act, how to dress. We ourselves never really felt ownership over our own images. And to see an art form where there's the opposite gender is embodying the female image and showing that you can be sexually liberated, you can be funny, you can be beautiful, you can be whatever it is that you want to be, you can live in that fantasy. It is an empowering space for women to sit to say, I want to do drag too.
I agree. RuPaul has a quote that says, we're all born naked
and the rest is drag.
So at this point in time that we're living in 2020, we should be able to do that. Clothes are just an expression of self. That's it. That doesn't define you. So if you want to go around and wear an alien costume, I'm more than happy that you are. If that's how you feel that you are and that is your self-expression, you're not hurting anybody else.
You're only hurting them if you tell someone you're not allowed to wear that because you are a boy.
For sure.
You're not allowed to do that. So I, how many more sinks do we want to throw in?
Our last sink, I would say, is I was going to say makeup. I find it amazing that an entire counterculture changed the beauty industry. There's people walking around contouring everywhere.
Again, it's an act of transformation. It's understanding your highlights and your lowlights, the shadows and the highlights, in order to be able to reshape your face with makeup and not having to use prosthetics or having to get injections. So it's a combination. You have theatrical makeup.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. This pancake makeup.
It's the art of theatrical makeup was adapted in a beauty context by drag. Now, I don't know I'm not looking this online. This is my concept. That's what I think has always been. Because in theater, you had to use makeup in order to make your face look you're old or you're young. But with drag, they took those concepts and they elevated in a way that made it so...
For beauty.
I just want to say, like, the last sink for makeup is MAC, Viva Glam, RuPaul. So MAC was originally a Canadian brand.
Yep.
They did the Viva Glam campaign. It was a fundraiser for AIDS charities. RuPaul was the first Viva Glam model, I believe. And that also, like, having RuPaul as the spokesmodel for an international makeup line was a massive, massive boon to pushing that into the forefront of pop culture. Yeah. So I would say that was like the last major sink.
Yeah.
So it's just reverberated on. A lot of people don't really know how our entire lives as women, as beautiful beings, has really been transformed by the contributions of these men who have really, I mean, they've endured a lot to bring us so much knowledge and growth. Like, their own self-acceptance and their stories of growth have really impacted me.
Yeah, and I feel that that's how women and men in that context can relate to each other.
That beautiful relationship between women and gay men.
It's really great.
It's like a special bond.
It is. Well, it's because I believe we really understand each other because we go through similar things. They're not exactly the same, but our feelings towards certain things, if it's oppression, if it's, you know, we have those moments where we can talk and feel ostracized outside of society or feel those ways and have that connection and understanding along with things that we like that are similar.
Yeah. I would say in many ways, like, though, I, as a straight woman, I've never encountered, yes, there's part of the world where oppression is real and I can't exist. I can't vote. I can't drive. I don't even have the right to say who I want to marry and what the right form of my body is. But in North America society, I never had to worry about someone not accepting me because I was straight, and I never had those concerns. So if you really look at it from a harrowing perspective, are the contributions of the LGBT community to our day-to-day lives are so impactful, way beyond drag.
Well, the drag community helped teach people what acceptance is. And accepting is part of that. They are one of those catalysts to you should accept and respect people for any type of race, color, male, female, alien, nut.
Doesn't
matter what you are. It just matters who you are. And so I think the drag community does that really well and lend a hand and helped for acceptance. And now we're in another wave. You know, we have our second wave movement that happened within LGBTQ+ community. So yeah, I think we say we leave it there.
So with that being said, thank you, Trini the Tuck Taylor, for joining us. And thank you for listening. If you want to join in on the conversation, all you have to do is reach out to us on social with our social IDs.
Alt Pop Repeat.
And
you can head to altpoprepeat.com as well, too. We're everywhere at altpoprepeat.
Altpoprepeat. And also, don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, rate and review the show.
Yes, please.
And you can also check us out on Patreon for every dollar that you give us.
Donate.
That you give us. It helps us produce more great content and talk to the great celebrities all around the world about fantastic alternative and counterculture topics. So until next time,
if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else?
Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Let the music play.
Oh, bitch.
That's a mean motherfucker.
What she say?
Oh,
bitch. you gotta throw me under the bus every single time that I make a little fuss? Up on the runway, everybody's looking at me. Gagging on my butt. I'll do me, you just do you. Besides, you look like you broke out of zoo. Looking all busted, girl, check your edges. Ew. Bitch, wanna borrow some glue? Girl, sit down, let me tell you the taste. You can never step up to this space. You're looking like a brick in your mouth.